episode of Pop It or
Heights. Today we're going to talk about the Catskill 3500, and I have with me not one, but two returning guests. I have John Coral, who did an episode with us on running, and Dar Peekaboo Muselli, who talked about mountain biking with us. So here we are. We are avid beer drinkers with a hiking problem, so I'll get started. I'm Papa Bear. I'm a hikeaholic, and I haven't hiked in 5 days. Hello, guys.
Hi. Hey, Chris.
So let's talk a little bit about what is the Catskill 3500. Well, it's a little bit different than when we started, because when we started, it meant climbing the Catskill 35 highest peaks that were over 3,500 feet. And this past year, that's changed a little bit. It's 35 minus 2. It's actually just the 35, the peaks that are over 3,500 feet. But when we started to get the initial recognition, there's two recognitions. There's a winter one and the regular one. You climbed the 35 peaks in the spring, summer, and fall, and then you had to go back and climb four others in the winter, right? It was Panther, Balsam Lake, Slide, and Blackhead.
I think it was just Balsam.
Good. It was just Balsam? Okay.
Right.
The one with the fire tower.
No, the one without the fire
tower. The one without the fire tower, right. The less exciting one. Okay. And then, after we completed those, we kind of got bit by the winter hiking bug and went on to do the winter 35. But we'll start here with the regular 35. I don't know what else to call it besides just the winter or just the regular 3500, but we'll start with that. So, as I stated, it was 35. Graham and Double Top have been taken off the list because they were on private property, and the property owner thought it was time to give the land a rest and let it revegetate and go back to its natural state. So now it's 33. We don't get a special pat on the back for that, but for the record, we did them all. Right, guys? So
yes, we did.
We'll go just around here. Let's start with you, Dar. What motivated you to want to start hiking the Catskill 35? Was it just they were cool peaks, or I think I want to complete that list? How did that work for you?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, the thing is, as you guys know, I was solo hiking for a couple of years, and I wasn't doing a lot. I was just doing a hike here or there on my own. And then, John, you introduced me and said you had a buddy, right, that was doing some hiking that you met through Scouts. And then I joined you guys on, was it Eagle?
No, it was the Fire Tower, Balsam Lake.
I think no, the first one that we did, right? Was that Eagle?
No, that was Balsam Lake and Graham. We did the Fire Tower.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah. We had a pretty big group with us that day.
Yeah, right.
Let's tell the reason why I encouraged you to join us.
I don't know if I remember. What was the reason?
You were solo hiking, and I forget what peak you were doing. And you said, yeah, I was at the bottom and it wasn't bad. And I started going up and then there's flurries.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm going up again and there's flurries, continuing to snow.
Then I saw bear scat
right in the middle of the trail, fresh.
It really freaked me out. I was like, what are you hiking alone for? Yeah. No, you're right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the main thing. I think to join some other folks was the main probably motivation, but yeah.
The secondary motivation was, well, if a bear comes, maybe they'll go after somebody that's bigger and meatier than me. Or somebody that doesn't run as fast as I do.
Yeah, and I picked you guys because you're slower than me. So.
So was it that point where you thought, okay, this would be pretty cool to finish this list, or just kind of casually saying
that? Oh, no, at that point, I wasn't even considering the list. I just wanted to get out and hike. I mean, I think you guys maybe were more into it than I was, but then as I started doing it, I think I got more,
at that point,
more motivated, because I got the maps and I'm like, wow, there's some really cool hikes here, good viewpoints. And I had done a few of I did Balsam Lake by myself. I think I did Slide with Emma by myself before I met you guys, I think.
Yeah, I think I remember
I did
you saying
Westfield
that.
With Emma.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that was, I'm not sure if that was before I met you guys. I think it was. But anyways, I had done a few of them. I'm like, wow, these are really cool hikes. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it was, I had, at that point, I had done three of them with one of my sons, quite a few years before that, and thought, wow, it'd be pretty cool to get back and do the rest of these things. Similar, where, you know, I got that pack of maps in and I started going through it and then did some research and heard about the Catskill 3500 Club and thought, gee, yeah, that looks like a pretty cool challenge. And that's where I kind of got started. How about for you, John? Did you set out with this goal, or did you just kind of, as you went along, thought,
you know? Well, I actually had known you for quite a few years through my son, right? You were scout leader of my son's troop. And I was one of a handful of adults who went on all the camping activities. I won't say all, most of them. And I was loving it, you know. And then when you decided to time to hang up your, you know, your scout uniform and retire, you know, we got a new scout leader, and I stuck with it until my son graduated as an Eagle Scout. But I really wasn't motivated to stay in Scouts. You know, my main goal was, I want to make this program successful for my son. And you had gotten out and were doing some cool things. And, you know, there were a number of hikes. We did some three high adventure treks with the Scouts. That was a program that had started up right before you left. And it's like week-long hikes, you know, 50, 60 miles with the Scouts. And, you know, we had some canoe mixed in with that, kayaking. So, you know, I was enjoying it. And I invested in some equipment and didn't really see any reason why I should get rid of it or let it rust. So you were active, and so I just kind of joined up with you.
John, first of all, I just want to say you did more than just were a handful of adults that helped out. You played a big role in developing that high adventure program. You were a big part of that, and it really, you know, made me happy. You know, we had become friends through Scouts, and then we started hiking outside of Scouts. So yeah, you bought that equipment, and you didn't want to see us sit there collecting dust, yeah, on it, right?
Yeah.
Nobody could, right? Cause, right, as you started going on these longer high adventure trips, you started investing in equipment. And just a little bit of background on our high adventure trips. We, over the course of 2 years, hiked the Appalachian Trail from the Delaware Water Gap to, just right outside Sterling Forest in New York, right around Greenwood Lake. So AT hikers, anybody familiar with the AT? That's a nice little section we picked off, and not exactly an easy one. Not the easiest section to hike on the Appalachian Trail. Not the most challenging, but definitely not the easiest, and something those kids and us as adults could be happy about that we were able to do. So, John, you started doing these Catskill 35s. When did the challenge of doing them all? Was there a moment when you said, hey, you know, I think I want to do this all? It was just kind of like, I mean, we were real loose in the beginning, right? It was just kind of like, hey, anybody available to go on a hike this weekend? Okay, let's pick off this one here. And then I know for myself, you kind of reached that point where, okay, I can do this. I'm going to finish these.
Did we even, so when we first started that first hike that I joined you guys, were we even into the Catskill 35s at that point?
See, I don't think so. When I look back at it, I'm thinking that
I don't recall.
It was just kind of like there was a list there, but we were just kind of like, yeah, let's go over and check out this mountain next time. And we weren't even locked into it because I think even at that point, you know,
whose idea was it to even start this Catskill 35? It wasn't my idea.
The first one I remember was Balsam Lake and Graham and one of the...
Another adult
was with us and his son, Pat.
Pat was with us.
Was that hike picked?
Was Graham with us?
Yes, and Graham was with us too, yes.
So, yeah.
But who picked that hike, though? It wasn't me.
Okay, I'll take the blame.
Chris had the maps first.
Right, so you already had in mind. I think you were the one that decided this would be a cool thing to do, and we just kind of followed suit.
Yeah. I didn't know how real it was because I was just out of Scouts. So the truth was, I didn't know, number one, how much time I would have to give up to do it. because after leaving Scouts, I was taking on more, my workload became a little heavier. And, you know, my wife was very supportive of Scouts, but I wasn't sure how tired she was of this whole idea of me getting out of the house regularly. You know, as you guys know, you need that support at home for any of this to work.
Yeah.
So I really wasn't sure. So to me, it was just kind of a loose approach to it that this looks like it could be fun. So let's just kind of go along and see how far we can get with it. And then before you know it, I always say, you know, you reach that point from interest to obsession. And that usually happens when you cross that 50% threshold, when all of a sudden it just comes, it goes from, this looks pretty cool to, I'm finishing this. But, you know, we had a lot of fun on these hikes, but I also want to point out, you know, we were a good group. I just want to say, and I'd say this whether you were here or not, you guys are just great hiking partners because I think the three of us, and I'll even say this for myself, I think all three of us, number one, we look out for each other. And then number two, there were hikes where one of us couldn't make it. And if somebody was available to go with the other to make up that hike, we did. And I think that played, you know, for me, that was a big motivator too, that, you know, if I can't make it on a hike, there's going to be somebody there to hike it with me, and I'm not going to have to worry about falling behind. And I think as a group, we really did a lot to help each other and feed off of each other and support each other.
Yeah, I feel the same. Of course, you were the one that usually hiked.
You hiked with us.
Yeah, with the solo person.
You were the repeated.
You did some of the peaks. You probably did 50% of the peaks twice.
And it was usually me who was not making it.
I may be the biggest hikeaholic here then. I might be the one that keeps falling off the wagon. Right?
You know, the other thing is we all have similar capabilities, you know, for the most part. If we're going to hike fast, we can all pretty much do about the same pace, same terrain, you know.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't because I use Sawyer water filters. The Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high-quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors. Yeah, on those hikes when we need to pick it up, we can pick it up. But we also like to stop and smell the roses, take our time. We have those hikes where our pace is pretty darn slow. But you know what? We don't regret them either, right? Because those hikes are sometimes the ones where maybe you found that really nice place to stop and have lunch. Or maybe there was just a lot of cool things to see on that hike.
Well,
or maybe you got lost.
Or you got lost. That's always a positive. Well, no, let's say, wait a minute. Hikers don't get lost, okay?
Right.
We meander, we explore, but we do not get lost.
So what do we have? Two that I can recall where we end up getting back to the car in the dark.
Well, yes.
So.
Yeah, now we're going to get into that. There are two types of hikes in the Catskill 3500 list. There are ones with trails where you just very nicely take a trail up there and it's all mapped out. You could kind of see what the topography is and where the lakes are. And then there's the trailless peaks. And the trailless peaks in the Catskills are a lot different than they are in the Adirondacks. Now, I don't know about the other peak lists in other parts of the country, but in the Catskills, when they call it a bushwhack, it really is. You're not getting on a herd path and going up there. And we've had some pretty interesting bushwhacks. And one that comes to mind is Friday. And that's a memorable one for me for two reasons, well, for a number of reasons. One is we made our way over to Balsam Cap, and that was my last one before I needed to do the 4 winters. But we picked the most challenging way to get up there. It was fun, but it was the most challenging way to get up there. But we ended up hiking down in the dark. And to me, that's my most memorable of the Catskill 35. But, yeah. And then we have other ones where Dar and I are up there at our GPSs. And believe it or not, two GPSs sometimes had us 10, 20 feet away from where we needed to be. And we'll get into an interesting story about that when we go talk about the winter 35s. But yeah, the Bushwhacks and the Catskills, and I've had other hikers. I've had people I know who are Adirondack 46ers tell me, yeah, the peaks might not be as difficult to summit in the Catskills, but the Bushwhacks are definitely more difficult in the Catskills in terms of just basic navigation. So, Dar, do you have a favorite peak? Just on the regular list, not
on winter. On the official 3500 list, I had listed Friday because that was just a lot of fun. And that's what you just said. It was the path that we took up. But I'm trying to think. I mean, there's a lot of fun hikes. Wittenberg, Cornell was fun. I'd have to go through the list and go, yeah, I remember that one. That was a lot of fun. But, I mean, Friday was the one that I enjoyed because I think the elevation was like 2,200. And like you said, we took a path up that I think we probably couldn't have come down. And at some point we realized there's no going down here because, you know, we got up on the ledge. We didn't have ropes, I think, back then. So we could get up there, but there was no going down. So we didn't have a choice. I think we had to get up there somehow.
Yeah, I remember at one point just saying, once we've committed, that's it. We're going. There's no going. We're going up. That's it.
But the thing that was really frustrating, if you remember, eventually we got up top.
Spent more time climbing, looking for the...
picking our way through the head wall there, through the chutes. And we get up there, and we couldn't find the canister because the canister was not located directly on the summit. It was, I don't know, 20 yards away, 30. We're wandering around.
I don't think we had. I don't think we had the coordinates of the canister. We had GPSs, but I don't think we had the coordinates. So
We were standing there at our GPSs and saying, "This is the geological summit right here." Okay, we're here, like within 10 feet of where we're standing is the geological summit. Yeah, but there's no canister, so I think it was you, John. You had cell service.
I was wandering. No, I didn't have it, but I was wandering around. My phone buzzed in my hand, which told me I had gotten into an area that did have service, and I was able to look up the coordinates.
I stood
right in that one spot, and then you guys entered the coordinates in your GPS, and we found it. Because the other thing was, that day it was somewhat cloudy and overcast, and there was no view.
Right.
When we were up there, so... Yeah. All, you know, we look out, we're in the clouds, all we can see, it's like fog everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, anyways.
Well, that was probably the favorite in terms of challenge and excitement, right? But then there's the ones with the beautiful views. John, do you have one with the most memorable view?
I always liked the viewpoint on the back side of Table. That's still my favorite lunch spot. Mm. I think I've been there 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, you could pretty much sit there and look out over Friday Lone across to Cornell and Wittenberg. It's kind of like a horseshoe shape where you're really just looking out over all that wilderness.
Yep.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, that's a kind of a key thing for me. I really want, I mean, when we were trying to get the 35 done, we had to do all of them. But now that we're done, I don't want to go on a hike. I mean, woods are beautiful, you know, stone walls, all the different types of forests, you know, old growth forests, pine forest, et cetera. That's all nice, but I really want to see a view, at least in one area, one spot, at least on the hikes.
Right, because there was a number of those hikes where you, let's face it, you get there and you sign a canister and go turn around and go back.
Yeah.
Right. There's no view, nothing special. You sign a canister. Okay, check the box. Let's go back. And you have fun. I mean, don't get me wrong. And you're right. I mean, there's the camaraderie that always makes it worth it and spending time in the woods. But, you know, when you say, all right, we're hiking to this area, like Wittenberg for me is that spot where you're just sitting here saying, this is just a special place to be.
Yeah.
And Dar, do you have that place in your mind where you just say to yourself, wow, that's a place I just love going to.
No, I don't think I have a favorite spot. I think there's just multiple places that I enjoy.
Yeah, for me, Wittenberg was kind of special. It was the first one I did. I did it with my middle son, and it was a week after my father died. So I was at a place in my life where, yeah, I had a lot going on. And I just remember getting, on that day, it had rained for most of our hike, but by the time we made it to Wittenberg, the sun had come out. And it was just, it was absolute beautiful view. And we were just sitting there, and I just kept thinking, I could just stay here all day and look at this. Yeah, it was great. Is there a summit you would go back to that you know, say your children or just somebody said, a buddy said, hey, I want to try hiking Dar. Is there a place you would take them?
Well, I did take my daughter, Emma. I mentioned Emma before. I should have mentioned that she's my daughter. I did take Emma and my other daughter, Elena, and her roommate to Wittenberg. We did do Wittenberg in Cornell. Did we do Cornell? We did Wittenberg for sure. But I think that was a little too challenging. I don't think they were quite ready for that.
Mm-hmm. Wittenberg's tough.
We got up there and we got down, but it was difficult. Mm-hmm. It was a hot day. We're talking about 2,200 feet of elevation. Mm-hmm. I don't think they were ready for that, but you know, they did it. Yeah. Yeah.
John, do you have that special place in your mind that if tomorrow you just could go, somebody said, pick a hike off that list, pick one of those summits and go to it.
Kind of depend on who it was. Mm-hmm. If I, you know, no.
Yeah.
And I'd have to gear it towards their ability. Mm-hmm. So like right now, my wife's interested. When we finished up our winters, we specifically saved Wyndham High Peak for last because they got great views, not a difficult ascent. And she said that's the one she wants to try. So, I mean, she's been up to Giant Ledge, and, you know, it was not a piece of cake, but she was able to do it. So I think for her, I think Wyndham is the next one we're going to attempt.
On that same note, for people that might be listening who are just getting into hiking, they wouldn't say just run out there and maybe pick off Wittenberg as your first one or North Dome, but I said, look at something like Wyndham, right? Because it gives you that challenge. You're going up to one of the high peaks, but you're getting some views out of it as well.
Right. You get that reward at the end. Mm-hmm. You don't want someone who's going out on their first hike to work their butt off to find a rock cairn and a canister in the middle of woods with no view, nothing to see. I mean, that's kind of a letdown, I think.
Yeah, I can imagine as a kid, if my father dragged me up to Hellcott and said, yeah, we're going to go do this hike, and I'd get there and say, and look at a canister and say, this is it? This is what we hiked up the side of a mountain for? Yeah. So now let's talk about the winter 35. As I said, you know, to achieve the regular 35 recognition, you have to go back and hike four of them in the winter. And we did that. We started out with we didn't go overboard with buying gear. We kind of took the attitude, well, let's gear ourselves to finish these four so we can achieve this. But we all kind of liked it. And we made a decision, I think, pretty fast to say, let's do them in the winter. And we took part in Tom and Lori Rankin's winter hiking class. And if you're in New York in the Catskill region or close enough, I would highly recommend, I'm sure John and Dar, you'd agree, they do an outstanding job with teaching what you need to know to get started, at least in winter hiking.
Yeah, I think the other thing about that is, like, before we took that class, if you had asked me, you know, to do winter hiking in the Catskills, I would have been, no, I'm not prepared for that. It seemed like, you know, I mean, I ski and I'm in the cold weather and I can handle the cold weather, but at any point, if something happens, I'm 10 minutes away from a fire, you know, mm-hmm. getting to the lodge, but to be 3-4 miles from anywhere, that seemed like
three,
I wasn't
miles
prepared.
In difficult conditions, in
difficult
to even just
conditions,
you
terrain,
know, get around,
yeah.
Walk.
Yeah, but like I came out of that class, their class, and I'm like, I think this is doable. Like there was enough information there that I felt confident that, you know, I think we could do it. And I needed to get a lot of stuff, by the way. I didn't have half the stuff you did. But at least I knew, here's what I need to get to be successful and have fun with this. And yeah, that was a great class.
Yeah, I think we all started out with the value purchase approach. Mm-hmm. We didn't go out and get the top-of-the-line gear. We got something that we could afford to spend.
Yes.
And if we end up not liking this, you know, it's not a we're not going to break the bank. But
yeah, I was definitely well under $1,000. I mean, and that was spikes, snowshoes, sleeping bag. What am I missing? I'm sure I'm missing a lot of things, but
right, there's all the
well under $1,000.
I know with myself, it was the first items were like the snowshoes, as you said, the spikes, the micro spikes, the crampons. And what intimidated me, I had done a lot of winter camping with the Boy Scouts, so I wasn't afraid of being out in the cold weather. What intimidated me was doing that kind of hiking. Like John said, you know, you're going into rough conditions, rough terrain, under maybe what the worst conditions are in that area when there's snow on the ground and when there's very cold conditions.
And snow is not the worst conditions to me. Ice is.
Well, you're right.
When there's ice under the snow, or you might not be aware of, or just ice in general. And a lot of the trails are basically drainage. So,
right. We had seen, we hiked in areas where it was ice, right? We'd get to an area where you're going, you're descending or ascending on ice. Like the Cornell Crack comes into mind, right? It was just, you've got these two boulders there that in the summer, it's kind of fun just to shimmy up and get over it. But in the winter time, it's ice. Yeah. And I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of the height of that, but what would you say? Maybe 6 feet, between 5 and 6 feet. You have to make your way up there. And that was the first time we ever used ropes was on the Cornell Crack.
Yeah.
For me, it was, do I have the right equipment and do I know how to use it properly? I had researched the heck out of winter hiking. I had attended 2 Boy Scout winter hiking classes. But still just felt like, gee, do I have everything I need? And you could really break the bank on winter hiking gear if you allow yourself to, right? You can go all out with the ice axe and these special items you need. And I think what Tom and Lori did best of all is they kind of just broke it down to, if you're in the Catskills, this is what you need, right? I walked away with the confidence that I have the gear I need to do this and do it safely, most importantly.
Mm-hmm.
So either of you, I'll start with you this time, John, your favorite winter peak you did?
I don't know. I haven't thought about the winter aspect. I have an unfavorite winter, which you guys are both well aware of. And I think this is not high on your list either, given the number of times you took. Oh,
that's all, yeah. We'll get into
we'll get into that.
Son of a beep.
Now, the thing about the winter is a lot of unless you're in, a fir forest, all the leaves are down. You're getting views in the winter from trails that you would not get in the summer. Because you can just see neighboring mountains, right? Skylines. And to me, that just elevates the experience.
Yeah, for me, the winter, the woods are just totally different, right? It's the same mountain. You're on the same trail if you're doing one of the peaks with a trail. But when there's snow on the ground, there's no leaves on the tree. It sounds different. It looks different. The views are better.
Well, take for example this past weekend we were at Windham, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did a escarpment trail hike. Started with Windham. We had just been on Windham in the winter, 3 months ago, months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different. Completely different.
Yep.
I'm thinking this doesn't feel like Windham at all.
Yeah.
And even when you got to the viewpoints weren't as nice because stuff had leaves on it. It was grown in.
Yeah. And the other thing about the winter is just, people say it's just so quiet, but yes. Okay. You could go on the same hike and you're 3-4 miles from any civilization. Yes, that's true. And that's true for the summer and the winter. But in the summer, you've got birds, squirrels, chipmunks. You've got all kinds of animals, insects making noise. In the winter, there's nothing. I mean, there's literally nothing.
Wind.
There's wind. But, I mean, if you stop, it's literally as quiet as any situation you can find. It's pretty serene.
It's an eerie feeling at times, right? It's like walking into an abandoned house almost, right? You don't hear anything to a point where it's that the silence sometimes.
Yeah. It's almost an apocalyptic.
Yeah.
You think you've woken up and there was like a nuclear blast or something that happened, you know, and you're the only survivor or something like that.
But. Yeah. I mean, each season has its own beauty. It you really have to see it. Yeah. I mean, obviously in spring, you've got trees budding out. In summer, you've got the lush green growth. In the fall, obviously the colors of the trees changing. Yeah. And in the winter, I mean, the snow is incredibly beautiful. Snow and ice, it glistens, reflects the sun.
Yeah.
The
weird thing too is the funny thing about the winter is that it seems like it's much harder to ascend in the winter. Maybe you guys would disagree, but there's been hikes that I would say it's much, much harder to ascend a summit in the winter, right? Because you got snowshoes on, you're dealing with snow and ice and this and that. But if there's enough snow on the ground, coming down is actually easier.
Yes.
I mean, I've had cases with my snowshoes where there could be a bunch of ledges, but if there's snow, you're just boom, 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 boom. You're just flying down and flip-flopping down, and you don't even know where the ledges are. I guess you're putting a little bit of...
Is that the way you did Southwest Hunter coming down? You're just flip-flopping down? That's not the story you told me.
It's a little bit of a leap of faith, but I mean, I think sometimes you can actually get down quicker.
I agree. I think with the winter hikes, those, you know, ankle breakers and, you know, foot, you know, the getting your feet beat up by the rocks coming down in the winter, I agree. It is so much better, whether it's with microspikes on or with your snowshoes on. You're just moving along and you've got that confidence, because after you get comfortable with the gear, you've got that confidence that I'm okay. I've got traction. But every step I take down, I'm digging in and I'm going to be okay. I'm going to make it.
And it depends. I mean, sure, if it's icy, you're not going quickly, but in the deep snow, it seems like it's... We have opportunities to go pretty quick.
And I've got a fast way of getting down. And I like to do the old butt slide. I tell you, it's addictive. I just, one time when John and I were doing South Double Top, I saw somebody do it and I said, you know what? I'm doing that. And now it's become a thing for me when I winter hike.
So we're going to announce this here on the podcast. Papa Bear's getting a new trail name. From now on, you shall be known as Skidmark.
Yeah, I forget where we were coming down from, one of the trails. Yeah, I was a little bit ahead of John coming down, and every chance I got, I just left the trail of my butt just sliding down. I remember these guys were coming up. They were coming up late, and they were struggling. Remember, they didn't even look like they had the right gear. Yep. And they were down there, like, huffing a little bit and puffing. It might have been, maybe it was Friday we did. Okay, it was Friday.
Where the one guy had broken one of his snowshoes, but he was still going to get up there one way or the other.
Yeah, they were down there at the bottom, and I started sliding down, and I started thinking, oh, I hope I'm not sliding right into those guys. And then they saw me coming, and they were looking, and they said, wow, you just look like you're having so much fun. It's got to be a lot more fun coming down. I said, you bet it is.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, we were really lucky this year. We had a fantastic winter snowfall.
Yeah. We did.
You know, we had a 40-inch storm at one point. We had 30 inches or more on the ground for a long period of time. And it was different than stuff we had done in prior years, because in prior years you get a few inches and a lot of ice.
Wow. Yeah, we almost lost you in that. Was that a spruce trap? We were hiking and you got caught in, was it a spruce trap or?
Yeah, I fell down about two. It was a couple feet. We were going up to, it was Double Top actually. That's Yeah, I had slipped. You guys were a little bit ahead of me, and then I realized I was in a spruce trap. I had to kind of dig my way out and finally was able to get some traction on what I believe was a rock or maybe some ice and was able to pull myself out. I didn't feel like I was in danger, but I did feel like, I'm going to have a tough time getting out of here. And at one point, I may have to just go, backtrack and get out of here. But this year was the most snow we ever had. And the year before, Dar and I did a lot of the summits together. And I don't know if we even used the snowshoes in 2018 and 19, that season.
Yeah, it was limited.
Or was it 1920? Yeah,
I'm not very limited.
Yeah, 2019, 2020. I think we went most of the season, but maybe putting them on once or twice.
Yeah.
But they're fun to use. And like I say, you get that. Once you're using them, and you build up that confidence. And what would you say to somebody about winter hiking? I mean, because we all three of us had those apprehensions. We weren't sure we were going to do it. What would you say to somebody that was considering winter hiking?
Well, I would say you can't just jump from summer hiking to winter hiking. I mean, it sounds cliche, but you really do need to take a class. You need to learn some basic survival skills, because at the end of the day, you don't know. I mean, we could all have been stuck somewhere. You get a bad injury, we're not going to leave each other. So you're stuck overnight. And if you're not prepared, and you don't think about that stuff, right? You don't even think about that stuff in the summer, because if you need to stay on the trail overnight in the summer, it's probably not a big deal, right? In the winter, it's a big deal. I just think you need to be prepared. And it's hard to know what you need. That's why I say you almost need instruction from somebody. Take a class. I don't know. I mean, you could probably get that information online too. But I felt good going to a class where you can ask questions and that type of thing.
Right, because things can get bad real fast in the winter. Like I said, in the summer, you can get stuck in the woods and be uncomfortable. In the winter, you can die.
Yeah.
That simple, right? I mean, if you're not prepared, you don't have the right clothing, or you didn't bring a change of clothing, and you're stuck out there. And, nobody goes out there planning for that to happen. And even the most experienced hikers have accidents. Things will happen. And if you're not prepared and you find yourself having to spend a night out there, or even several hours until search and rescue or emergency personnel can get to you, it could be deadly. And John, would you have any advice?
Yeah, I know. Anybody who's hiked in the Catskills knows this. There are a lot of places with no cell service. So don't they think that, I got my cell phone, I'll be fine if I fall and break my leg or twist an ankle. Chances are you're not going to have cell service unless you're at the summit. And what happens next?
Well, what if you're in one of these bushwhacks? What do you tell them, even if you have cell service?
Yeah, where are
you? Well, I'm somewhere off Devil's Path. But not sure exactly where I'm,
I mean, obviously the basics that you got to remember. Tell your spouse or your significant other or someone where you're going, what your intended route is, where you're parking. Give them that information. tell them, hey, if you don't hear from me by 7 o'clock, which should be like an hour after dark, call the DEC, Rangers, and leave them the number. Yeah. I think that's posted at any trailhead or sign-in register will have that number listed.
Right, that basic information is so important. I know that I have a habit where I'll take a copy of the section that I'm going to be hiking in, and indicate on there where I'll be parking, have a number of the, emergency agencies in that area. And that's sometimes a few more details if they're needed. I'll draw, if it's on a trail, I'll make sure I highlight the trail we're going to be on. If it's a trailless summit, I'll do to the best I can. I'll say, well, this is the route it looks like we're going to be taking, but especially in the winter. I mean, you should be doing that on all your trips, but especially in the winter. That could save your life. That could be the meaning. That could be the difference between life and death. Anybody that works in any of the emergency services know that time is so critical in an emergency situation. Yeah. I know. Now, we've talked about GPS, and it's going to lead us into that peak that we all three of us, I think, can agree we dislike the most. We went up to first our first winter attempt of North Dome. We decided we were going to do Cheryl first. And we spent, I don't know, was it maybe an hour looking for the canister up on Cheryl? With two GPSs, we were just kind of wandering around.
And keep in mind, this is after the canisters used to be painted gray. Just a year or two ago, they went and they repainted them all blaze orange.
Yeah, and we just, with three of us up there, we just kept going back and forth, and we finally found it, but it didn't give us enough time to go over to North Dome, which leads back to another winter hiking situation is, you know, knowing when to turn around, right? With the three of us, you know, our turnaround time in the winter, we stuck to it. We said, okay, you know, we're not going to risk being out here after dark. At that point, we said, all right, we're going to be cutting it too close. We turned around, went back to the car. We'll go back and do North Dome another time. Second time, didn't make it up. We turned, you know.
Right, and having a turnaround time is one thing, but the other thing, keep in mind that you're not going to hike the same pace in the winter, even under good conditions. Right, yeah. You're going to be a little slower. You got a lot of heavier stuff on your pack, snowshoes, yeah. Crampons, microspikes. Those things weigh a decent amount. You've got some warmer clothing. That's heavier. You're wearing warmer clothing, so yeah. You're not going to be as flexible as you would be in the summer. So I'd say we hike like 50% slower in the winter, roughly.
Yeah. That's
our summer pace.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a situation where if it were another season, we probably would have said, well, we have our headlamps, so let's take a chance. But in the winter, you're right. The combination of we know we hike at a slower pace, and do we really want to take a chance of, you know, if things go wrong,
right. And
being stuck out here.
There's a lot less daylight.
Right. Yeah, and then, you know, and there were a couple times, there was one time when Dar and I did Westkill, we thought, hey, you know, early in the hike on the way up there, a lot of bounce in our step early in the morning. Hey, maybe on the way down we'll get over there. And then it was like, you know what? West Coast Brewery's just down the street. The heck with that mountain.
It's funny when you're on a neighboring summit and you're coming down and descending, it's funny how that mountain grows.
It looked a lot bigger on the way down than it did on the way up.
When you're at a level, you're like, boy, that summit is so close. We could get there. And then you descend and realize, oh my goodness, we're not going to make it.
At some point on the way down, it kicked in. I said, you know what? I think I'd much rather make my way over to the West Kill Brewery than up to the top of that mountain today. Yeah. So we've completed this. We've done the regular one. We did the winter one. So I think what everybody might be wondering is what's next for us. And we've done some Adirondack hikes. We're currently working on the Loyal Sauk Trail. So, John, what do you have? You have any hiking or backpacking goals in mind? Any list you're working on, or just I want to do that type of thing?
I think I already mentioned I like to do trails that have a view. Right now, I've got a short list of things I'd like to do. I think some of the stuff down in the Hudson Valley area. I mean, we were just talking about Storm King briefly. The Highlands. I know you guys have done Breakneck Ridge. I've not done that. The issue we run into is it's a longer drive, which means less hiking time. And after a full day of hiking, it's tough driving home. I mean,
yeah.
So, right now, let's just say this: my goal is to continue doing this as long as I can.
Just go out and have fun. Just pick something, right? Go. Just say, okay, let's go check that out and go do it.
It's obviously a great health benefit, and something about being in the woods kind of puts things in perspective and sets your mind right, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Dar?
Yeah. Well, I think, we've done some hikes at Harriman, but there's certainly a lot of trails there. So I think there's some, I still think there's a few trails I want to do at Harriman. I definitely want to get more involved in Views and Brews. So I want to take a look at that and see what's what's available there. I mean, we've poked around into PA, you know, like you said, World's End and some stuff down there. Yeah, we're getting down to the nitty gritty where we either have to go longer distances,
yeah,
or come up with something new. I'm sure we'll find something though. Yeah.
There's a lot of trails in the Catskills that are may not go to peaks, right? And I know they have the Catskill All Trails Challenge. I mean, there's. I think you guys may have done more than I have. I know you're working on the CHHs. You've got a lot more. You're way ahead of me on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for me, views are good, but you know, I love finding waterfalls, fire towers, yeah, right? Isn't it cool? Get to a cool waterfall, right? Isn't that great when you're in the middle of the woods and you find that really cool waterfall? The fire towers are always a lot of fun to go to.
I love when we hike and there's a brewery right in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
I
love Anybody who's out there who's entrepreneurial minded, yeah, there's an idea for you. You know, putting a brewery, like, you know, maybe the Catskills Adirondacks, I think that would go over really big. They'd love that up there, right? More reasons to draw. Another reason to draw more people up there.
We found a soda machine. Where was that? Didn't we find a soda machine?
Was that in Harriman we saw that, maybe? Or
on the trail? I thought we did. But they can have a soda machine. They can have a beer machine, right?
I'm thinking it might have been up when we did a Sterling Forest Fire Tower. I think it might have been up. For some reason, I'm thinking that's where we... So, and there is one up on Bear Mountain. They have the soda machine, two or three soda machines up there. Yeah, Bear Mountain. Yeah, it's a fun hike, but I went there in August and it was pretty crowded. But it's beautiful. Right? I mean, if you live down in the city or North Jersey, that's one that's close to home that you can get to. Seeing Bear Mountain's cool, but when you get off of that area, there's less people. When you get away from Bear Mountain itself. We know we've been there when it's been busy at Bear Mountain, and we get away from that specific area, the peak there. There's some really cool trails and some nice views over there. All right. John Coral, Dario Muselli, two of the best hiking partners you can have. Guys, it's been a blast these years hiking with you, and I just can't wait to get out and do more hiking with the two of you. Thanks so much for...
Oh, you had to say that? What if my wife's listening?
Hey, we've had Lisa.
I'm going to be in trouble when I get home.
Hey, you know, Lisa's come out on some hikes with us, right?
Yeah.
Get her into hiking a little bit. But I'm really looking forward to getting out and doing more hiking with you guys. And hey, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Go to the website. Go to papabearhikes.com. Check us out there. All our social media links are there. And past episodes. Get out there and have some fun.
This episode of Pop Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.